It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline. And it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul. And he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now here are your hosts, Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino.
And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us alongside Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can't get to the phones. You can make your voice heard via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can also follow and interact with both of us directly. Paul Dottino is at Giants WFAN. I am at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. The big news of the day, obviously, is David Wilson's injury and the fact that he was told by his doctors after undergoing tests yesterday that they recommend he does not continue to play football. The Giants waived, injured him. He has until 4 p.m. Eastern to go through waivers. It would be a surprise if anybody does claim him on waivers, and then the Giants will likely put him on IR. But in terms of his future, if you read between the lines, if you look at the quotes in the transcript and the statement that the Giants released, it appears as if David Wilson is going to hang up the jersey. And this is much bigger than football, Paul. This is much bigger than X's and O's. This is about protecting a player from himself due to a condition, not necessarily a bump or a bruise.
There's no question. We're talking about a career ending injury. Whenever you deal with the neck, whenever you deal with potential of paralysis, this is not something you goof around with. I've been trying to tell people over the last several days, since David Wilson left the practice field the other day with what was called a burner, he was lucky to walk away. How many guys, you know, don't get that chance? You hear about players all the time who say they're going to play 3, 4, 5, 10 years in the league, whatever it is. And they always say, I want to be able to walk away from the game. And if you're really lucky, you'll have minimal injuries. But the most important thing is to be able to walk away. There have been countless players at the high school, collegiate, and pro level who have been unable to walk away because of serious, serious maladies. I think David Wilson should consider himself fortunate that he was able to walk off the practice field the other day, and his life is going to be 100% normal with the exception of playing football, from what I understand. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
As he said, he was a first-round draft pick. He got to play in the NFL. He got to score a touchdown. He got to set a Giants record with kickoff returns. He has left a mark on this franchise, this league. His professional career has a stat line to it, and it is one to be proud of. I don't at all, in any way, shape, or form, belittle or not understand how devastating this is to him, because he's a very bright young man. He's a fun-loving young man. He is always optimistic, always with a smile on his face. We want nothing. Everybody wants nothing but the best for David Wilson. But in the scheme of life, he's going to come out ahead on this because the alternative of playing and having something dreadfully wrong happen is not a logical option. It's that simple.
23 years old, has his entire life ahead of him, Paul, as you just alluded to. And the NFL's a different game right now. With the way concussions occur, teams have to step in. You can't just let a player go out there just because he has the passion and the love for the game. And Tom Coughlin talked about how, you know, he's smiling all the time. He was out there lifting weights and working out 10 days after having the initial surgery in January. And you love that. You want that type of football player in your locker room. But at the end of the day, you also need to make sure that he realizes the big picture. The one line that stood out to me in the statement that the Giants released, this is what David Wilson said, quote, "I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me or pity me. I lived my dream. A lot of people only get to dream their dream. I lived that dream. Now I have a chance to dream another dream and live that too," end quote. So, you know, that's him putting things in perspective. A lot of Giants fans are going to say this is a huge disappointment. It's a huge blow. It's a first-round pick in 2012. You expected to groom him. This is going to be a guy that you're going to build around. But let's not lose sight as we move forward the fact that you drafted Andre Williams in the fourth round, was a real bright spot in this first preseason game. Hopefully this is a sign of what's yet to come. They were active in free agency. They signed Rashad Jennings from the Oakland Raiders, who also seems to be a great fit in this system. And once you look past that, now the writing is on the wall, Paul, for a guy like Michael Cox, and the writing is on the wall for a guy like Kendall Gaskins. Things are going to start to heat up in training camp, because all of a sudden those two who were on the bubble, they were on the peripheral, now have to realize, hey, I've got a legitimate shot at making this roster. Because after you get through Jennings, as I mentioned, Williams, Peyton Hillis, they got to keep a fourth running back in addition to a fullback. And Cox and Gaskins, next four preseason games, Paul, this is show me time for those two individuals.
Well, I think you saw it late in the second half the other night in Canton, how both guys were able to get in there and touch the ball some. To me, all right, Gaskins took 12 snaps, by the way, and Cox took 11, which gives you an indication of how the Giants do want to see a competition between both. The difference is Gaskins is a bigger, stronger, more powerful inside kind of back. Cox is a quick slasher with incredible speed for his size, but he doesn't necessarily have the other elements all down pat. We know last year as a rookie he had trouble with the playbook. That's one of the reasons he barely was able to get on the field. You'll recall, folks, last summer I said Michael Cox is going to make this team as a kickoff returner. A week later, the Giants had him on kickoff duty, and that's what he did. He made the team as a kickoff returner. I still thought that was his best spot. Given that he didn't learn the playbook very well, he got buried on the depth chart. Now the Giants have a new offense. Is Coach McAdoo's offense a lot easier to learn? So I am told. Does that mean Michael Cox is absorbing more of that playbook than he did with Kevin Gilbride's playbook? I would assume so. But is it enough, Lance? Is it enough to get him on the 53? His skill set is enough to get him on the 53, but is his football knowledge and his ability to process at the NFL level and at the NFL tempo going to allow him an active roster spot on this team? That is the big question, because right now he is the fastest of all the Giants running backs in camp. So there is room for his skill set. I might also add, I believe there's also room for Kendall Gaskins on the practice squad. There is not room for Michael Cox on the practice squad. And you'll remember last year in training camp, one of the things that I talked about for battles on the depth chart was that the Giants, if they wanted to keep both Charles James and Trumaine McBride, would have to sneak James onto the practice squad, and McBride would have to be on the 53. Remember, those guys were fighting for one spot. And as it turned out, James wound up getting activated anyway. But this is a very interesting dynamic, which doesn't necessarily relate to the field of play, but to the eligibility of the player.
Alluding to the fact that Michael Cox played enough last season, even though it wasn't a huge role, that he's ineligible to go on the practice squad. Gaskins hasn't been in a regular season NFL game. You mentioned that Cox can contribute on special teams, and obviously he's got the speed. If you're looking, though, to fill the void left behind by David Wilson, Paul, if you're just going by that mindset, Michael Cox, I would say, is your guy. Because he at least gives you those unique talents that you're at least trying to have in the mix in the backfield.
And truthfully, you would have to believe that whichever guy wins that job, they're number four behind Hillis and Williams and Jennings. So if that person's only going to have a very limited role in the offense anyway, well, it's probably going to be the specialist, the speed specialist, that would get the spot. So to me, I think just by circumstances, Cox may have a slight advantage going in, but he's going to have to earn it. They're not going to give it to him.
And the fact that if you could play special teams when you're the fourth running back, obviously that's the best way to make the roster as well. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your calls. We'll get to your tweets. You can also follow and interact with the both of us directly. Paul is at Giants WFAN. I'm at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We start with AJ in South Carolina. AJ, welcome to the program. What you got?
Good morning, Lance and Paul. I got two questions for you. About the David Wilson injury, I was looking forward to seeing him play, but he's not.
Well, it's a disappointment, as you alluded to, in terms of the organization feeling they invested in a guy who they thought was going to have a bright future, and no one really knew much about this neck condition. It reared its ugly head after he suffered the injury last season, and then he re-aggravated it in during practice. But, you know, you got to put the disappointment aside. You've got to put the draft pick selection type of mindset aside, because at the end of the day, as Paul and I discussed, AJ, this is just bigger than football right now. This is protecting the well-being of a person, and that takes priority over any X's and O's.
My last question is Daniel Fields. I know he was entering the Sunday game. What's the update on him, Daniel Fields?
Well, he's been classified having a sprained knee, a bone bruise, to be more specific. So right now, they'll just have to evaluate it and take it day by day. It hurts his chances because, Paul, there's five guys in the mix, and you want to be able to stand out since this is really a wide-open competition.
During the last three practices leading into the preseason opener, Fells and Donnell had actually been the two best tight ends of the group. Well, the other night, if you watched the game against the Bills, you saw Donnell did one or two good things in the passing game, but was not very good in the running game. In fact, had a lot of difficulty making his blocks. That's not a good thing. So for Fells to be injured like this, it certainly does not help him. That's for sure.
He should play Saturday, right?
Well, there's no guarantee that he's going to play Saturday, AJ. Sometimes with a bone bruise, it could linger. Right now, it's too early to tell. Tom Coughlin had a conference call yesterday. All he mentioned was that Fells was the only one that was hurt because he had the bone bruise in the knee. But we're not going to know more until we see practice today, practice on Wednesday, as we get closer to Saturday's game.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, AJ. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. Andrew is in Stanhope. Andrew, good morning. What's happening?
Good morning. Yeah, he was a great kid, and I always liked the interviews you guys did with him, and it would seem like it was hard for him to hide his enthusiasm. Like, he would try to act serious during the interviews, but it seemed like you know, he always wanted to smile, and it was, like, contagious. Kind of reminded me of Aaron Ross, you know, always upbeat kid. And it's a bad loss, but he did live his dream. I was a good wide receiver, but I didn't follow through. So he made a great point that he did have success. He didn't get injured, you know, before he ever played, like in a preseason or something. And as far as the running backs go, it's like good, you know, six of one or half dozen of the other. He was the fastest and most elusive. And the West Coast offense, I remember the Eagles, I think Westbrook was the running back, and he was similar skill set. Reggie Bush, running backs like that that are smaller and shiftier. But the downside is they might fumble more, get injured easier, not as good in short yardage. So you lose in one respect, but you gain where you have bigger running backs that can move the pile, that can get the short yardage, the goal line. So it's a loss, but the running backs that we have, I think, are big and strong, seem durable, except maybe Hillis. So what are your thoughts about the offensive line, the running backs, and lastly, you had a caller the other day who made a great point with the defense in preseason, the pass rushers, they're not showing all their moves. But the bad thing is the offensive line. They have to block for Eli. They have to run block and they didn't look good. And last year in the preseason, right away it was like, oh, the offensive line, they're not getting a push. So it doesn't matter if it's preseason as far as the linemen, the offensive linemen. So are the Bills really good up front? So I wanted to ask you about the Bills' defense, and what do you think about the running backs and the offensive line as a whole? Thanks.
I'd appreciate the phone call, Andrew. Well, the Bills' front seven is pretty damn good. I mean, they've got a very active group, and Jim Schwartz is a blitz-happy type of defensive coordinator. You can only read so much into the first preseason game. Paul, it's fair to say that the offensive line, at least the first team, struggled a bit in terms of run blocking. They didn't really start running the ball effectively until they went up against the second-string Bills defense.
Correct.
And changed some of the offensive linemen. But, you know, Beattie wasn't in there. This is the first time that a lot of these guys are in a game at the same time together. Is it really fair to evaluate this first team offensive line? Isn't it fair to say we need to see a few more games before we start getting nitpicky here?
Well, I don't know, Lance. I liked what Walton did. I liked what Mosley did. Schwartz whiffed on the one sack, which was a shame because I don't expect that out of him. Pugh did okay. Not so much Charlie Brown. I mean, excuse me. I definitely had some thoughts and some grades on the guys. And the interior of the line, again, I know Schwartz had that one whiff on the sack, but I thought for the most part, it was what I thought. I mean, the left tackle spot is a concern. When the reserve offensive lineman came in, I thought Richburg played well. I thought that James Brewer had trouble again. These are not surprises. These are things that we've expected now for the last several months since we first saw these guys in OTAs a while ago. I'm not shocked by what I saw the other night. It just reinforced everything that we've already known. I did not see any surprises. The Giants need to see some surprises, good surprises, over the next 4 weeks, before that Detroit game, if they're going to feel comfortable about that group as a whole. I would add this to you. Defensively, liked what I saw out of McClain, liked what I saw out of Kennard, liked what I saw out of Marcus Kuhn, liked what I saw out of Jay Bromley, liked what I saw out of Jonathan Hankins. A lot of good. DeMontre Moore.
Zach Bowman, too.
Up and down. He had a bad interference call, which...
But made up for that by deflecting the ball that Cooper Taylor intercepted. You may not give him a brownie point for that, but...
Should have been pass interference. Got away with it. Nonetheless, it wasn't called. I remember.
Well, that's what's going to happen with these new rules, Paul. You know, it's touchy-feely.
Harry Carson was standing next to me. I turned to Harry, and I said, Harry, he got away with one. Harry said, Paul, was it called? I said, no. Therefore, he didn't get away with one. There was no penalty.
Not a bad way to look at it from a great. That'll give you a chuckle.
So those are just some of the names that I saw on the positive side. And also on the negative side, unfortunately, I thought that Charles James had a tough night. And he was able to get extra playing time because McBride was left home with a hip injury. And that gave James a chance to really get in there and get a ton of snaps. And he gave up a number of completions, had a couple of penalties, I think, too. That's not so good because he's got a skill set that can be useful in this league. But if you're not going to produce in those situations, it's not healthy for your chances.
Hosley also had a rough game, I would add. There were a few passes that went his way in the slant options, and he was beat a few times. Now, we know Hosley's got to serve a four-game suspension.
Right.
So you at least put him on the suspended list, but he's going to have a hard time making this roster, Paul, after four games if everybody's healthy.
Well, and again, if everybody's healthy, that asterisk really does carry a lot of weight because in this league, you just never know week to week how many people will be healthy. And so it's kind of like an extra bonus. I hate to say this, but like when Will Hill was on the suspended list to start last season, and then all of a sudden they were able to bring him back, and it was like, oh, great, because guess what? Stevie Brown was lost for the season with a torn ACL. We need that extra safety. And that's the way you have to look at it, is that Hosley is a bonus. Now, whether or not he's a bonus that you can afford to carry or a bonus that you think is worthy of a roster spot. You'll make that decision down the road. But for the time being, you have to say to yourself, okay, well, there is a guy who's got some experience in this league. He's young. He's got some skills. And we can stash him for the time being.
That's why there's no point of cutting him. And I'm hearing chatter on Twitter that they should get rid of Hosley. For what reason?
He's foolish.
He's not taking up a spot on your 53-man
roster.
That
is foolishness.
Why would you get rid of a guy like that?
Makes no sense whatsoever. And I still stand by his skill set, by the way. He has had a tremendous, in my mind, he's lost a lot of confidence because of the injury he had last year, and then he made some bad plays. That compounded his confidence issues, and that's why he was not the same player last year that he should have been. During the offseason, I felt as though he was starting to rebuild that, and that's why it's important for him to actually get some positive results on the field before he sits out his four-game suspension, because he needs to feel good about himself again. When he's right, if he's mentally right, he has got the skill set to be a good cornerback in this league. I maintain that. I've seen too much out of his physical tools to think that he's a washout.
One other thing I wanted to bring up before we get back to the phone calls, Andrew was asking about the offensive line, Paul, and you went into who you thought played good, who you think needs to improve. What caught my attention was the fact that they used Richburg, Paul, at center and left guard instead of right guard. That stood out to me somewhat. What were your thoughts on that?
Again, versatility is the key for the Giants. They love their linemen to be able to play multiple spots. For the moment, it looks to me like they want Richburg to be able to get that swing spot down, much like Kevin Booth did when he was here for several years. Booth was able to play both guard spots. He was able to play center. And he became an invaluable resource for this team. I think they are so happy right now with how Brandon Mosley is grabbing that right guard spot that they're thinking to themselves, you know what? Maybe it's not so bad that Richburg sits back for a little bit and learns three spots. Maybe that's a better way to go here, because Mosley at this point has done nothing to hurt his chances of holding down that job. And I will tell you this. Mosley's not a left guard, and Mosley's not a center. He doesn't have the skill set or the acumen to move around like Richburg does. So in this case, if you want to play right away, it's a curse for Richburg to be so versatile and to be, you know, so valuable in that role. Much like the Mets fans used to tell me about Joel Youngblood many years ago. Joel Youngblood could play every position on the field. Well, so he never got to play one position full time.
They just waited for somebody to get hurt.
In some ways, that's a curse. Maybe. That's the only way that Richburg doesn't start the season at right guard, is if they decide that his versatility is just so valuable and Mosley has done enough to hold the job.
Similar to your role on the radio broadcast the other night. You did a little play-by-play.
Oh, God.
In the locker room. Did I miss anything else on the resume, Paul? I mean, you were Mr. Versatility.
You know, when I grabbed Strahan on the field right before they went out for the introductions of the Hall of Famers at the stadium, Michael had said to me, look, I've got NBC. I've got NFL Network. I got to do Westwood One. I said, I got to do so many interviews here tonight. Do you really need me to do this? And I said, Michael, come on now. Oh, Paulie, I don't know. Michael, how many of those people covered every one of your games and practices for 15 years? All right, Paulie. All right. One question. I'll give you one question.
Oh, you didn't give up, though, after the one question,
so,
Paul.
So then I asked the one question about the bust and what he thought about it, because that's the first time anyone had seen it when it was unveiled by Jay Glazer on the stage at the Hall. And I figured I wanted to ask him something different that he hasn't been asked 5,000 times
before.
Because
he's so bored of answering the same question.
Right. That's so I gave him something different. What did you think about the bust? Nobody ever talks about that because it's like after the fact. So he gave me a really nice answer. Liked it very much, that there was a space in the tooth and everything else. Okay, great. So then I said, now on the air, and you remember this, Lance, I said, okay, Michael, I lied. I got another one for you. And he looked at me and he was like, oh, he's waving his finger at me. And then I had asked him about the weekend and the week. And now that it's all coming to a close, what was the best part of it for you? And, of course, he answered that question and then busted my horns unmercifully as I signed off. And, in fact, one of our camera guys, Jamie, happened to be there with the video and took the whole thing on video.
Oh, we got to see
that. And as we closed out the interview, Michael is, like, really dissing me visually to the camera. And Jamie has promised me a copy of that. So it was a good moment, an enjoyable moment. And certainly welcomed by myself, because it was just great to see Michael, and I'm just so thrilled for him.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter alongside Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Kashawn is in Maryland. Kashawn, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. Hi. How about yourself? What you got?
Good, good, good. I haven't called in such a long time. I've been working like crazy. I feel like a typical woman, like doesn't know anything about
well,
football.
We're glad but to anyway. Have you aboard because somebody's got to balance out Shakes and somebody's got to balance out Len. So it's good to
exactly.
have another Maryland rep.
Yes. Well, first, I want to say I my condolences to David Wilson. I know he must be devastated, and he did handle it with class, but I'm sure he's so hurt. But good for him that he's able to walk away from the game. Congratulations to Michael Strahan. I was unable to see the Hall of Fame. I only saw the highlights because it was my birthday weekend, and I went to a concert. So I have a few questions. First, with Michael Strahan being inducted, is that now 17 Hall of Famers for the New York Giants?
Well, they have 20 guys in the Hall of Fame who had spent a significant or all of their careers as Giants. There are a number of other people who had cameos. Like Larry
okay.
Zonka, for example, was only here for a couple of years, and they don't really consider him a Giant. He's more of a Miami Dolphin in the Hall of Fame, and justifiably so. I mean, that's where he really made his name. So if you just talk about the core Giants who are in the Hall, the list is 20, I believe, right now.
Wow, which makes us the most in the NFC East, correct?
Well, the NFC East has only been around for a couple of decades now. Remember, the merger between the AFL and NFL started in 1970, and that's when they started breaking up the divisions. I mean, years ago, folks remember it was the Atlantic.
Right.
Years
ago.
Okay. And the Central many years ago before that.
Well, I guess.
Century division.
Because Sean's coming from the perspective, Paul, if you want the Giants to be on the top, you sell it as the top team in the NFC East.
Okay.
If you don't necessarily want the Giants on top, then you go big picture perspective, because I believe the Packers are up there in terms of the most representatives all
okay.
time. I
yes.
believe I read that.
Okay. And then now going to the game, I really liked what I saw from the running game. I watched the highlights. Williams is very eerie of, Ahmad Bradshaw. Like, he's a horse. I like the way he ran, and I think he has a bright future ahead of us, and I think he should start. Alongside with Jennings. Can you guys tell me a little bit about Corey Washington?
Washington is out of Division II Newbury. It's a situation where he got a chance to sign with the Cardinals right away when he was undrafted coming out of school. Had a cup of coffee there. Didn't show them anything, I guess, in terms of what they wanted. They immediately got rid of him after, basically, I think he took a physical and that's about it. I don't know why. They just took a quick glance at him. The Giants figured, hey, guy's 6'4", 200-plus pounds. He's got that very, very long wingspan. Let's take a flyer and bring him in. And from the moment I saw him at OTAs, I was intrigued by him. He has a skill set and the tools that no other receiver on this roster has.
Wow.
Now, does that mean he's going to make it? I'm intrigued. He could make it. If
could
he
has a Jernigan? Because I'm not a fan of him.
Well, he's a totally different animal. We're talking about a skyscraping receiver as opposed to a scat back receiver,
right.
A Smurf. Different style of receiver. Now, in my opinion, Corey Washington, at the very minimum, as long as he performs admirably well in training camp, he's a practice squad guy, at the very minimum. Because you know what? He would be a great decoy for the scout team as you're going up against big 6'4" receivers around this league. What an outstanding scout team guy to have around. Extremely valuable. So to me, as long as he shows like he can play at an admirable level, he's on the practice squad. That's at the very minimum. Now, if he shows that he can produce like he did the other night, heck, didn't that remind you a little bit of what Victor Cruz did a handful of years ago where he was just another guy, and then against the Jets, he caught 3 touchdown passes, including a bomb down the sideline, and all of a sudden everybody said, oh, look at this guy. He might be pretty good. And then Victor Cruz wound up making the team. I don't know that Washington made the team off the game the other night, but he helped his chances. And, again, I've been telling folks now since OTAs, get your binoculars out on him because he's an intriguing prospect. Keep watching.
Okay.
Keep watching because he's got a chance.
The other thing I'll add, Kashawn, and I didn't mean to cut you off, I'll let you continue, is that he's also been showing some flashes in practice. And if you could do that in practice, you could translate it to the game. That also helps your case because it shows consistency.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely intrigued. Two more things. I'm glad to see that Watch the Sight and Sounds. I think Victor Cruz is trying to take more of a leadership role, at least vocally. So that's good to see, because my concern, I think we have leadership on the defensive side with Stevie Brown and Antero, et cetera, but I'm just worried about we need a rah-rah guy on offense. So it's nice to see that at least Victor Cruz is attempting to establish that. And then last but not least, Lance, I meant to tell you, I really enjoyed your Saturday show when you talked about the LeBron James signing. And I've been listening to you on Saturdays and SiriusXM. Your shows are very rich and intriguing. So congratulations on your spot with that. And, guys, I'll definitely be in touch more. Thanks for taking my call.
Sounds good, Kashawn. And I appreciate you listening on
SiriusXM.
Rich
and
so much.
Intriguing.
Now Paul's going to give it to me for that. So
wow.
I appreciate that.
Rich and intriguing. Usually the only word I hear to describe Lance is short.
Oh, look at
but
this.
We'll take rich
shots.
And intriguing.
I'm glad you're at least coming back at me, because I give it to you enough on the radio broadcast.
That's all right. We're good.
There
we're
we
good.
Go. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning, Drew.
Hi.
Hey, first off, man, it's sad. I'm sad to see hear about David Wilson. But as I called in, what was it, last week, I said on the air that I thought his career was done. So it's just sad to see that. However, I'm glad to see that, you know, at this point in time, he's able to walk away healthy, because, like you said, at the overall scheme of things, it's about the health of your players. And sometimes you have to protect these guys from themselves. So, you know, I wish David Wilson luck. You know, I don't know what the future holds, but I definitely wish him luck. He's a great player. We're going to miss him. Hey, man, I'm not going to stay too long, man. I just want to make another comment with regards to Sunday's games. I'm sorry, man, but some of you guys are acting like Sunday's game was game 10 of the season. Man, this was the first preseason game. It was a practice game. I mean, really, you expected to see a few mistakes out there here and there, so... You know, all of this, oh, these guys didn't show me nothing and this and that. I mean, really, it's the first preseason game. And I can see if it was the third or the fourth preseason game. It's the first preseason game. These guys, you know, they're out there. They still have to hone their skills. Yeah, I know, you know, the running game struggled against the first team defense of the Bills. Would be due to us the first season. So, you know, I mean, for me, and I didn't watch the game. I was on the road, man. I was up in Maryland this weekend, so. I was on the road. I did DVR it, though.
You weren't hanging out with Shakes, were you, Drew?
No.
Okay,
no,
I just
no,
want to make sure. I wanted to make sure you're in a good state of mind, because, you know, we know what Shakes could do to individuals.
Nah, well, heck, I should have, man, because hanging out with my cousins up in Maryland, boy, that ain't no that's a drunk fest there. But, nah, we had a good time up in Maryland. So, at any rate, yeah, I was on the road, so I didn't get a chance to see the game. I did DVR it, though, and I kind of watched bits and pieces of it, And, Williams definitely impressed me a little bit. But, again, like I said, it's the first preseason. So, you know, for me, I don't take a whole bunch out of it. Now we'll see what happens in the next couple of preseasons. But overall, you know, I mean, it was just another game. At any rate, I just wanted to say that. And, again, like I said, man, I just wanted to, you know, just give my shout-out to David Wilson for what he did. Man, we're going to miss you. Great player. And, you know, man, best of luck.
All right, Drew. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. Real quickly, before you chime in on another thing, did you watch the game over again and make your charts? Because if Drew wants to watch it again on DVR, maybe, you know, you can have some company. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Believe it or not, Lance, I have not had a chance to watch it a second time
look
yet.
Look at this. This is impressive here.
I'm a little behind.
Wow.
That was a busy Hall of Fame weekend.
Wow, look at this. We're digging deep for the excuses. Paul, you know, you sacrifice sleep to get to the charts here.
I do, but there comes a time. This is the start of the season. I can't be sacrificing health right now. But I do want to add a couple of things to his comments, especially in terms of what he's looking for when he watches the tape. Ryan Nassib looked better than he has in his year and a half as a New York Giant. I thought he performed extremely well. Not every pass was perfect, but it was thrown with much more assertiveness and much more accuracy than I had seen him as a rookie. During the previous three or four practices leading into the game, he appeared to be finding some type of rhythm and some type of level. He looks more comfortable now. And to me, again, that was the best I've seen Ryan Nassib look in a year plus. So I offer that to you. The other thing I want to say to you is about Andre Williams. Now, you folks know that since before the draft, I was hoping the Giants would get him. As a matter of fact, in the fourth round. So I hit a home run with that. Having said that, and I've scouted this guy extremely hard, the thing that I was curious about, because he's a between the tackles power runner, I did not know if he would be quick enough to be able to turn the corner and get to the outside at the NFL level. I knew he could do it in college, but I saw him basically as a between the tackles guy in the NFL. The other night against Buffalo, he turned the corner on a 21-yard burst that brought the Giants to a first and goal at the 3. On the next play, he took it in for a touchdown. That burst showed me something. It was only one play, and I know it was the second team Bills defense, but he showed me that he does have the quickness to get to the outside against NFL players. Now, maybe against the elite, I'm not so sure, but this was intriguing to me because it shows me that he may even be more than what I thought he was, even more like what Bradshaw was than even I thought. So let me give that to you. And one final viewpoint, the Giants used a standard fullback. That would be Hanoski or Connor for 40% of the snaps in the game. See, I did pretty well analyzing, despite the fact that I haven't seen the replays.
Yeah, you've covered up the fact that you haven't seen the replays very well.
And this is important because we've had people suggest maybe the Giants would not go with a fullback this year. Well, I'm telling you, if you watch that game, not only did you see Henry Hanoski be an important part of that power running game.
Huge part, yeah.
He blocked. He threw a key block on the 21-yard run by Williams. He threw the key block on the touchdown run up the middle by Williams. Not only did the fullbacks get that job done, Hanoski in particular was terrific. The H-backs did not do so well. The tight ends, who doubled as H-backs, no. Those grades were not nearly as good. Which really should answer your question, folks. Do the Giants really need to keep a fullback on this roster? It's an emphatic yes.
And I'll add to the fullback position. On Monday's conference call, Paul, Tom was asked about, well, what happens if another running back goes down? Would you bring somebody in? His answer was, well, let's not forget that Hanoski and John Connor can always get some carries in the event of an emergency. I'm not saying they're going to have a huge role, but that was alluded to on Monday's conference call.
Well, again, right now they have four halfbacks, okay? Four. I'm including Cox and Gaskins as one, splitting up the number four spot. But if that guy goes down, and again, he's not expected to have a very big role on this team, what you're saying makes some sense because you just slot a guy in there, and okay, if he gets one or two touches or whatever, fine, whatever.
The other thing about the tight ends in terms of whether or not they can serve as fullbacks, which you were just talking about, Paul, this is just a visual thing that comes to mind when I think of whether or not a tight end can serve as a fullback. All the guys are so big on this team. It's not the easiest thing for them to get low down in a position that Hanoski is used to playing. I mean, that may be an excuse, and I'm generalizing it, but a 6'7 guy to get down and block for a running back is not necessarily always the easiest thing.
You know, Lance, they tell you time and time again, that power is a great thing to have when you're throwing a block, but leverage is even better.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Rocky is in Florida. Rocky, what's happening?
How's it going, Lance?
Do well, Rocky. How about yourself? What you got?
Yeah, well, actually, I was wanting to talk about since Wilson went down. I kind of saw that coming, but I know a bunch of people was kind of wanting talks over Hillis, which to me, I think that's crazy.
You mean moving Michael Cox up the depth chart, Peyton Hillis to the fourth spot? That's what you're talking about?
Or Hillis not even making the team. That's just foolish.
Well, I think Hillis has value in multiple departments, and I wouldn't necessarily cut a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield, can block to a certain degree, has his limitations, and also can carry the ball. Michael Cox has not given you that in all three areas, so they at least need to look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, and he said that physicality, kind of like Jacobs used to do. There was one round I saw in the game where he just mauled one of them tacklers. I mean, they say the other guys are kind of power guys, but they don't run like Hillis does. Well, I see some highlights of Williams coming out of college that looked pretty good, but I hadn't seen him do it on the NFL level, so I wouldn't go into that. But, yeah, I like the way you harped on that about Coughlin. He said specifically that Henry can run the ball, and that kind of just chipped his hand, I think, to let us know that Cox probably
it's way too early to speculate at this point because, you know, as Paul just mentioned, Rocky, keep in mind, they usually would keep four running backs. That's not a stretch. So if you say Jennings, Williams, and Hillis, who's going to be the fourth running back? It's going to be Cox or Gaskins. So to say easily that they're going to get rid of Cox or Gaskins, I don't know if it's that easy because if you're going to keep four, one of those two guys is going to make the 53.
And by the way, why would you even think about demoting or cutting Peyton Hillis when he is the best blitz picker-upper among the running backs on the roster? Why would you even think about demoting him?
I don't know. Steve keeps saying that up in D.C., but to me it's foolish. He's 250 pounds. I mean, I like you, Paul. I mean, I don't see that happening. But, no, what I was thinking when he said, well, Henry can run, and, you know, we saw Connor go, what was it, one carry for 7 yards in the game. I'm wondering, is the door going to be open for two fullbacks?
I don't see that, to be honest with you. I think two fullbacks, look, how many teams in this league even carry one fullback? You know, to carry two, I just don't see that happening. I will say this. Hynoski has an edge over Connor going in. He showed the other night that he could still get it done, and he's healthy, and he came out of the game clean. So, to me, it's still Hynoski running a length ahead of John Connor. Now, could that change over the course of the next 4 weeks? Sure it could. But I got Hynoski leading that race.
Right. And I noticed John said something about Brown on that sack. Schwartz just got beat straight up by Kyle Williams.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Nothing to do with Brown.
No, we mentioned that before. Now, Brown did not play well in his time on the field. In fact, he got a lot of snaps last night. I had the number here in my notes somewhere. He got a lot of snaps, and I don't think he graded out very well. But it was Schwartz who gave up that sack to Kyle Williams. No question about that.
On top of that, though, there was penetration off the edges.
Oh, yeah.
Even though Schwartz was beat, there was still penetration.
And part of
that
was because the tight ends weren't blocking very well.
Yeah, quit trying to save John, Lance.
Well, no, we talked about that in great detail on yesterday's show. John wasn't necessarily off point. He just didn't necessarily remember the play, and that's why, from what I remembered, Schwartz was definitely beat. I agree with all of you, but there was penetration still off the edges, and one of our listeners was kind enough to show us the replay on Twitter, and for those of you who follow the Giants chat, hashtag Giants chat feed, you could go on there and you could find the replay. I'll try to bring it up and maybe retweet it.
But, yeah, you're talking about the left tackle spot not grading out, Paul. Remember me and Lance was talking about maybe bringing Brock McKinney in. Is it, you think that's an option?
He's shot. I've already inquired. He's shot.
Okay.
I mean, you know, look, at some point, if the Giants get desperate enough, they may wind up having to throw Pugh on the left side, and the lesser of two evils is to throw one of the other guys on the right side. It could come to that. Tom Coughlin does not want it to, nor does Coach Pat Flaherty, assistant offensive line, the offensive line coach. Neither one wants to do that. But sometimes you just have to make the move. That's the last resort.
Right. I think that's why they put in Richburg at left guard, and they keep trying to get Mosley all the reps they can because they're afraid they might end up having to put Jerry or Schwartz at right tackle and kick Q over. But that's all I got for today, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Rocky, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Wow, he just hit something. Schwartz, I believe, has had some experience at tackle.
He has throughout his career.
So, wow. You see, follow that line.
Dangerous now.
No, follow that line. Pull Schwartz out of left guard, make him the right tackle, make Pugh the left tackle, and now Richburg goes to left guard with Mosley at right guard and Walton at center.
Well, but I would still be in favor of keeping Pugh on the right side, Paul. If anything, why don't you just move Schwartz to left tackle? He's already on the left side. Why would you now try to screw up with the consistency on the right side?
Well, I'm not a big fan of doing that, but the reason they might have to do that is because usually your right tackle in your line configuration is your bigger, more powerful, stronger guy because you prefer to run strong side right. Schwartz is more of that type of player than Pugh is. So I could see why you might do that if you're trying to configure your line again.
And you're saying you have confidence in Richburg being the left guard starting week one.
I have confidence in Richburg starting at guard or at center. I never thought he was going to be left guard until the other night when I saw him taking snaps there. We all thought he was going to potentially be the starting right guard. But see, the caller just hit on something there. He's absolutely right. Jeff Schwartz has played some tackle in this league before. I don't know if it was left or right tackle.
I'll try to look it up.
See if we can find that, Lance. You know, I tell you something. Heads up to that caller. What was his name
Rocky.
Again? Rocky. Rocky, big time. Big time. Double thumbs up from me. That is the kind of insight, kind of the peeling the back of the onion that I pride myself in every day and why I stay up endless hours every night to think about what's going on with this team. And I did not think of that particular configuration.
Rocky, you better save a copy of this show because Paul Dottino does not throw out compliments that easily.
Well, I mean, like I say, I spend so much time trying to figure this stuff out. It's rare for me to have something fall through the cracks. That is a really, really, I don't even know if he realizes it. That was a very astute comment.
Well, we tend to forget that Schwartz has some versatility. So I looked it up. Here's his resume. With the Vikings in 2012, he played right guard in parts of 13 games.
Right.
Okay. Then with the Kansas City Chiefs, he was expected to compete at right tackle, but then he wound up playing more at guard. So from what I'm seeing used at tackle in training camp and in practices, but when it came to the games, much more guard play than tackle play.
And it seems as though right tackle was the spot that he was intended to
right
compete
tackle
for.
Is where he was at least utilized during the course of practices, correct. But I'm not seeing much game action according to the summaries here that I'm reading through.
Okay, so the scenario that I just painted to you
would be to move him to right tackle.
Is something that would not be totally out of bounds. Wow. Wow.
But I'll tell you one thing, Paul. If you're thinking of doing that for the sake of this organization, you better do it now. You're not waiting a week before week one to start experimenting.
Well,
catch my drift.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Lance. They still believe that within the next couple of games or couple of weeks, Will Beatty's going to be back at left tackle. I mean, that's what they think. That's what they hope. Certainly Will Beatty hopes that. I mean, look, let's not kid anybody. Everything else that we're talking about is smoke and mirrors. The bottom line is the Giants need Will Beatty to be healthy, and they need him to produce. That is the best-case scenario for this line. Make no mistake about it. There are really no other options. Options B, C, D, E, and F are not good ones.
And we're not going to know that until he gets into a preseason game. Want to follow up, Joe, who helps us out on the program, did a nice job doing more research on the right tackle experience for Jeff Schwartz. 2010, first five games he started at right tackle. 2009, that was with the Carolina Panthers, he started three games at right tackle. So he got eight games under his belt in the span of 2 years at right tackle.
And
the rest mostly at guard.
And that now becomes another potential matrix for this offensive line as we move forward.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Also want to get to some of your tweets here before we head back to the lines. A number of you doing a good job continuing the conversation here. At Rich Chaparro writes, Andre Williams is a great pick with the combo of size and speed. He will be a steal. He will be the steal, excuse me, of this year's draft. So obviously everybody's excited to hear what Andre Williams was able to do. At Jersey Devil, so if LaMichael James gets cut, I think the Giants should bring him in for a look. And see, this is what I thought the conversation was going to start to go to, Paul. With David Wilson down, everybody was going to start to look at the waiver wire, look at the third and fourth stringers elsewhere. Why are we doing that if Andre Williams has been a bright spot thus far? Peyton Hillis, we know what we could get out of him. Rashad Jennings so far has transitioned well into the system. To bring in another back, remember, he's got to learn the system for a few weeks before he can make an impact. So if you bring him in a week before training camp ends, he may not be able to contribute until week six or week seven. What good is that? How's that going to help you?
I'm with you.
To me, I think that's really getting ahead of ourselves in terms of the conversation. At JP Hedden 123, is Washington the Barden that never was his chances making the 53, referring to Ramsey's Barden? You were talking about height, 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 Paul. People can't forget about Ramsey's Barden's resume here.
Nor should they. Because Ramsey's Barden was a receiver who the Giants traded up in the draft to get, thinking that he could be that skyscraper that they were missing. And unfortunately, it just never worked out. Ramsey's Barden for a number of reasons, including injuries, did not produce for this team, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, also just got cut out of a camp a few weeks ago.
He was cut by the Bills right actually before training camp started, maybe like 2 or 3 days before camp.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. His production in regular season games never warranted him staying. He used to do pretty well in the preseason. It would save his job. In fact, last summer, he was the best receiver in training camp and had a really good preseason. And then, you know, got hurt, and okay, that's it. Waved injured, goodbye. Enough is enough. You know, could Washington be that guy? Wow. I think Washington has, what's the word I'm going to try to use here? I want to be very nice to Ramsey's Barden.
Boy, you got to dig deep for that.
Ramsey's Barden did not always put his nose to the grindstone. How about I put it that way? And Corey Washington, to me, looks like a kid who wants it. That could be the difference between him and Ramsey's Barden. How about that?
The desire, the practice regimen, those are big indications. You know, the other part of this dialogue with respect to Barden versus Washington, Paul, if Washington is fortunate enough to make the team, I look back at how the Giants utilized Barden. When Barden was on the field, he wasn't taking reps away from Cruz and everybody else, so they used him in some red zone packages. So if Washington makes the team, I mean, he could line up, but they're probably going to use him in specialty packages.
Well,
that's when he's going to have to deliver.
The biggest thing Barden had going against him in terms of a skill set was that he did not have a good quick first step. In fact, it took him usually 2.5 strides to get up to his maximum speed. There was very little acceleration there. And so the Giants had figured out by his first season here, he would only be useful against zone defenses because he would have trouble beating one-on-one press coverage off the line given his lack of acceleration. That was going to be a problem at the NFL level, which they quickly found out after he was here. Washington, I don't see that lack of it. I'm not going to say he's a burner because he's not. But he seems smoother in his gait and seems like he's got a quicker gear than Barden did off the line. And he beat man-to-man coverage on the touchdown the other night in Canton. That's not a play that Ramsey's Barden would have made because he would not have been able to get downfield in position to make that play. In all honesty, the defensive back, as we saw one time in Philadelphia, had better position on the ball than Barden did. Barden also was not a guy who would fight for the ball when it got into his box. Corey Washington fought for that ball the other night in Canton.
Because it was an underthrown ball. He came back and bailed out Ryan Hassett.
It was funny. I mentioned to somebody yesterday on the telephone, it was almost like Eli DePlexico. Throw the ball into the box and let the skyscraper go get it. Doesn't have to be perfect. Just give him a box. And he'll finish the play. That's what Corey Washington did for Nassib the other night. It was fun to watch because the Giants haven't had guys since Nix was healthy a few years ago play with a bigger box. Even Victor Cruz, who's a terrific receiver, doesn't always play with a big box.
Has his limitations, but when you're 6'4", you should be able to take advantage of most of your one-on-one matchups.
You should be able to reach across the Hudson River to grab a ball.
Lofty expectations on the part of Paul DeTino. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. This caller was alluded to earlier, I believe, by Rocky. So we segue to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Yo, what's happening, folks? Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Yeah, I know. Hey, listen, first of all, you know, let me get at Paulie D for a minute. You know, Paulie, usually when I peel back onions, I usually end up crying, man. Sometimes you're too smart, you know, that you end up looking stupid, man. I think we just need to, you know, try to keep as many people in the position as they already are, man. I think, you know, too many changes is going to end up hurting us in the long run. That's just my opinion.
You're talking about the old line.
Yes, I am, sir.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would just assume have Will Beatty get healthy, go back to left tackle, and play like he did a couple of years ago. Everybody agrees that's the best solution possible. But if that doesn't work out, you can't go 16 games with a suspect left tackle. That's not going to work because that's a recipe for disaster. You better start thinking about alternative plans now in case Beatty can't make it happen.
I agree with you. Hopefully, you know, I mean, Reed will get healthy. But if not, you know, maybe there'll be somebody who gets released from another team. But I think we
Steve, I go back to the same thing with the running backs that I brought up. You know, everybody's scouring the waiver wire and saying that there's going to be a hero, a savior elsewhere. How about working with what you got so that they know the system, they're comfortable, and they can slide in as opposed to bringing a guy in after training camp ends? Remember, the rosters have dates where they get cut down. It's not to the benefit of the Giants to just wait around and look at the calendar and say, oh, maybe three guys are going to be available. You got to work with what you have, too.
Well, I actually agree with that. I think that, you know, hopefully there's somebody on our roster that we can plug in at some point at left guard, but I'm just like, you know, Schwartz, where he's at. You know, I don't want to really beat that up, but I do want to address, what's his name, Rocky or whatever, because apparently, you know, they're really not receiving the whole message. First of all, unfortunately, that Wilson is, you know, no longer going to be able to play for us, I don't really see there being – I see there being at least four running backs. But my thing is this. I just want to keep Cox over Hillis. I don't want to see Hillis go, but if it came down to Cox and Hillis, I would take Cox, and I'll tell you why. Because, number one – you're talking about health. You're talking about age. You're talking about two other running backs who can pretty much move the pile if need be. We're talking about a fullback, you know, whether it's going to be Connor or how nice to. And I just feel that, you know, Cox gives us something that Hillis won't ever give us. First of all, he's not fumbling the ball. Second of all, he can get to the edge. That's something that, even though Williams did show up the other day, I was happy to see that. I think that we could get that a little bit more consistently from Cox. We're certainly not going to get it from Hillis. So it's just a matter of what we already got on our roster.
You do understand that Cox had a lot of difficulty last year adapting to the NFL playbook. And, quite frankly, don't even think about asking him to pass protect for your quarterback, because that's not something that's going to happen. When he tried to do that last year, he was an absolute disaster.
Hey, Paul, I'm not going to argue that, but what I am going to say is if we're going to be passing, we got other people who can pass block. If he's in there, more than likely it's going to be a run, so let him do what he does, run the ball.
Well, on third down, if you're going to go with one setback on third down and then try to spread out the rest of the offense, that one running back who's back there better be able to help out Eli. Because if he can't, what you are doing is telling every defensive coordinator in this league, send the house in the kitchen sink, because the quarterback is going to be naked.
Hey, I believe Jennings and Williams both can do that with their size. I believe they can do that.
Well, you may believe they can do that, but right now you're going to ask them to learn and get better at it than Peyton Hillis, because he's the best one at it of all the guys on this roster.
But Jennings is pretty good at pass protection.
What about?
I think
he's okay.
He showed the coaches that
he's okay. Hillis is the best, though.
I mean, you know, Heinowski's back there. You know, I mean, the thing is, we got Heinowski. I just feel like, listen, I know that, you know, Hillis definitely has some skills that, you know, the other guys don't have. I just feel like with the makeup of the other running backs that we do have, if it came down to Hillis or Cox, I think Cox is more valuable to us, and given, you know, our current roster.
Well, Steve, I understand where you're coming from, but I think that you're really setting up a true hypothetical, because I would find it very hard to believe right now, and things can change due to injuries and new signings, that it really is going to come down to Hillis and Cox. I could see it more Cox versus Gaskins than Cox versus Hillis. I don't think those two are really going to be put up against one another when it comes down to finalize the 53-man roster.
Right. Well, hopefully, you know, like I said, we'll probably put Gaskins on the, you know, the practice squad. And it's just really going to come down to what fullback we're going to keep, you know, now that Wilson is out. So, you know, I wanted to hear Paulie's take on Marcus Coon. How did he grade out, Mark?
Really well. Really, really, really well.
How did he earn his grade? What grade did he get, and how did he earn it? Because I didn't see nothing from
Marcus Coon got a B+ out of me. He was all over the place. Showed power, showed force, showed a high motor, showed pursuit. He did miss one tackle, which I was disappointed about, where the ball carrier went right by him, and for some reason, Marcus just didn't react quick enough, and before he actually made his move, the running back had already gotten by him. That was disappointing. But time and time and time again, you saw him muscling his guy and showing tremendous effort through the end of the play, which is what his best skill set says. He's got a high motor. Marcus Coon helped himself the other night. I'm telling you that right now.
Well, I didn't see it, Paulie. I know he got power. I didn't see him getting into the...
I'll tell you what, to be fair, it's not always easy to see that stuff, even when you're watching it on TV, because they're more concerned with the ball. When I'm down on the sidelines, and I was on the sidelines for the entire game the other night, I'm watching the trenches. That's a big, big part of the game for me. I can always look periphery about the ball, and in fact, a lot of times, I'm going to let you in on a secret, fellas. When I'm watching a game from the sideline a lot of times, I will actually watch the entire play in the trenches and then worry about whatever happened with the ball when I look at the scoreboard replay. And I'll worry about seeing what the result was of the ball then. I need to see what's the guard, the tackle, the center, the DT, the nose tackle. I need to see what those guys are doing. That's important stuff to me. You know, Pat Kerwin, who I admire immensely, always says, watch the game from the perspective of the guys without the ball. Once you learn to do that, boy, you know you're into the game.
It's a science.
It is.
Definitely. Hey, listen, real quick, guys. I'm going to throw three quick questions at y'all, and then I'm going to go ahead and listen off air so other calls can get in. But I wanted to see if you could touch on Beeson's health. And I also want to know why it seemed like the tempo was better when Nassib was in. And if you, Paulie, if you guys could give Qualls a grade on what you saw from him, man, I really appreciate that. Great show. I'm going to listen off air. But like I said, I just want to know about Beeson's health, why Nassib seemed like he had better tempo in the offense, and how you guys graded out Qualls, man. Listen, thanks for taking my call, guys. You guys have a good week, and I'll be listening.
All right, there. Steve, you as well. Appreciate the phone call.
Let's go in reverse. Qualls was rather quiet. I'll need to see more out of him in the next several preseason games if he's going to steal a roster spot, because they're deep at DT. Beeson was out there doing some sprints the other day on his foot, clearly making progress, and still believes that he will play in Detroit in the season opener. Nassib, we talked about earlier in the show, looked the best he's looked since he's been a Giant. And it wasn't about tempo for me. It was about controlling the offense, showing assertiveness, playing with some poise, throwing some pretty good balls as well. For all of these reasons, I was pleased with how Nassib played.
As Steve, I think, was also touching on the fact that he felt the tempo was quicker when Nassib was in his quarterback versus Manning. I mean, I didn't really sense that big of a difference. I mean, Eli was fast to the line. They were running quick paces when he was running under center, but the problem was he wasn't in that long. He was only in for three series, and they ran the ball more so than they threw the ball.
Right.
That's what it came down to.
Yeah, if you were looking for the, quote, up-tempo Giants offense the other night, what you saw was just a little bit more speed, but not truly what they planned to show during the regular season.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. So glad you could join us for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Back to the lines. Mike is in Toronto. Mike, what's happening?
Hi, thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it, Mike. What's on your mind?
I just have a comment and a question. You know, as far as the Wilson thing, I mean, it's terrible news, but, you know, he did say not to pity him. And, you know, a door closes in life and another one opens, and that's Andre Williams right now. The guy's got tremendous upside. So, you know, instead of looking at LaMichael James and all that, let's focus on this kid who we have who's got great potential. And I'm really excited for him. The other thing is, everybody's talking about Corey Washington, and they should be, but there's also an underrated guy is Marcus Harris. I think this guy could be a really serviceable, at least possession receiver for us. So I was wondering what you guys think about that.
Well, he had a number of receptions in the preseason game. He had four, to be exact. He led the way. I think he had the most receptions. I don't have the box score in front of him.
Yeah, six targets, four catches.
So, I mean, he made the most of his opportunity, but I think it really is a numbers game, what it comes down to, Mike. You look at all of the guys in front of him, because you said he'll be a good possession receiver. Well, you know, you can make the argument they have already guys that could also serve as possession receivers. He has to do something to me that's above and beyond to give him a reason to move past somebody else. That's what it really is going to come down to.
I will add this, Lance. The health of some of these other guys is going to come into play, too. You know, you're looking at Beckham's nursing a hamstring. Manningham's knee still isn't right.
Randall,
although I think his is less serious than the other guys, but Holiday has missed a week of time because of a hamstring. Jernigan Well, he's not hurt right now, but he usually does get hurt. So injuries are going to play a factor in this thing, too. We had one of our Twitter people message me before asking five or six receivers on the final 53. Well, depending upon the health of that core, you may have to keep six. Because if you got one, two, or even three guys who are going to be iffy every week because you don't know if they can practice, you may need to keep six. I mean, I think they might want to try to go with five and spare themselves another body at another position, but they may not be able to, Lance.
Well, this is why it's important for Ryan Nassib to win the number two job, Paul.
Darn straight it is.
You don't want to have to keep three quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
Then you're going to screw yourself, and you're not going to be able to keep six or seven wide receivers. They kept five last season. Right. On the 53-man roster. I have the 53 from last year. It was Nix, Cruz, Randall, Lewis Murphy, Jarrell Jernigan. So you're bringing back at least what you look at from last season. Randall's still on the roster. Jernigan's still on the roster. Cruz is still on the roster. Nix and Murphy are no longer here. But you drafted Beckham. Holiday's in the mix, as we mentioned. Corey Washington, if he can make a name for himself. So, you know, there's a few other suspects in addition to Marcus Harris. He's looked good in the preseason game,
Don't forget Manningham.
To answer your question, and Manningham, too. And Manningham's made some nice catches in practice, at least. Wasn't really utilized much of the preseason game.
I had one catch the other night that I liked, but the truth of the matter is he's still not right and is shaking off the rust. He admits that, but Mario also says that he believes he's still got to make this team. It's not a grandfathered spot for him. He's got four more weeks to do it. I think he will. I have confidence in him. But he's going to have to do better than what we've seen.
I agree. Another guy who really did well, and it's looking like a great pickup, is Zach Bowman. I thought he really hustled last night, or two nights ago, sorry. He was getting to the ball. He was getting in there, involved on almost every play. And Matt Verhey as well. He's a good hitter, just like he was in college. I think those guys could really make significant contributions. And my actual question was about JPP. Do you guys think he could ever go back to being like 2011? Because he was getting stood up by this rookie, and he really looked like pretty much what he looked like last year. And I'm really hoping that the guy could be what we saw in 2011, because he just doesn't look the same anymore after that back injury. So I was just wondering what you guys thought about those things.
Well, John and I talked about this in great detail yesterday because a lot of people were bringing up the fact that he struggled against the rookie tackle for the Buffalo Bills. Now, I go back to number one. I don't think you're going to show everything in that first preseason game. I understand a lot of people are throwing out Paul. He says he's 110%. We've heard that time and time again. It's only words. You can't put much stock in it. So there is some skepticism from the fan base, and I buy that. But, you know, I've got to see a little bit more in terms of gameplay from JPP before all of a sudden I throw off the red flag and say, uh-oh, we're in trouble again. Do I think JPP is going to return Mike to a form where you're going to get 16 and a half sacks out of him? No. But I think it's reasonable to think that you could get maybe middle in terms of those numbers. Maybe get 7 to 8 sacks from JPP. Let's see him consistently stop the run, be active. I think he can be that player, but I'm not necessarily assuming and putting him up on a pedestal and telling you he is going to be an absolute game changer and he's going to have one monster game after another. We've got to at least keep expectations in check.
Yeah. And one last thing before I go, and I could just hear it off air. Demontre Moore, on the other hand, he's looked pretty good lately. He's looked like the kind of guy that was coming out of college who's projected to go in the first round. He's really coming in at a great time, might I add. And that's it. Thanks for having me, folks.
Appreciate the call. In terms of Demontre Moore, he had a few notable plays in the preseason game, but he also missed badly on a run, Paul, too. I don't know if you picked up on that one.
He did, but I did like the back-to-back inside slices that he got to the quarterback on. Looked active, looked quick. I still need to see him engage a little bit more with some power, which is what they want him to do against the run. That's why you mentioned that play that obviously he got a negative on. But I still think that on the whole, it was a good night for him. And, hey, he didn't commit a penalty.
Hey, that's always a step in the right direction.
But it's true because he has shown to be undisciplined
as a rookie. Mental lapses during the course of a game.
I didn't see that the other night.
He's the type of guy that will block a punt and then he'll get an offsides. I mean, that really is the storyline. That's the resume for DeMondre Moore coming into the season. You don't want to see that anymore. So, as Paul noted, if he doesn't show up in the box score with a penalty, that's somewhat progress. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. Shakes is in Maryland, and I have a funny feeling we are now going to debate about Marcus Kuhn. Shakes, good morning.
P-dot. Oh, man. Wow. Before I get into that, I wanted to say it was good to hear from Kashawn on the show. Shout out to her. Didn't hear from her in a long time. She's always coming with some good stuff.
I wish I could say the same thing about you, Shakes, but we'll wait.
Oh, little jab, huh, Lance?
I had to. You opened the door for that. I had to come in. Anyway.
I'll take it in the chin.
There you go.
But and again, good luck to Wilson and his future endeavors. I wish him nothing but the best. It's sad to see such an enthusiastic guy go down like that, and his career is over like just like that, and you're only 23 years old, still a kid. Real sad, but like he said, don't pity him. He got to live a dream that me and a lot of other people can speak on. We never got that chance. So good luck to you, David. Okay, P-Dot, I'm going to go on you now. P-Dot. You like Kuhn. You like what you've seen out of Kuhn? Really? Really? But you're going to say that you need to see more from Quarles? Are you serious? What I see from Quarles is pressure, stuffing the run with Jay Bromley. He's doing what I want Kuhn to do. I did not see that from Kuhn. Somebody tweeted that as far as Kuhn goes, the defensive tackle job is the whole position, which he does that because he don't move at all, disrupt, and then make tackles. He did none of that. It's not impressive.
Marcus Kuhn doesn't move?
No. Come on, man. Where is he going? He's still right there with the blocker. The blocker's in. I mean, we might as well be having a conversation. How you doing? How is my today?
Just so you know, Paul, Shakes has been saying this for weeks. This is nothing new.
Well, he's out of his mind. Watch the motor on number 78. Go back and look at the tape. Look at the motor. Look at the power. Look how he locks people up.
I got DVR. I paused. I think it's slow motion. He's a bum, P-Dot. A bum.
Wow.
And that's all I'm going to say about that. You can have your assessment all you want to, but I know what I'm saying, and that is bum.
All right.
Now.
Move on.
Sorry for getting so loud.
It's all right. Move on.
Shakes,
move on.
One other thing I want to throw out, and I don't want to necessarily make this a whole speech about Marcus Kuhn, but when you say that you've seen more out of Quarles, and it's unfair for DeTino to say that he's seen more out of Kuhn, Kuhn's got regular season games under his belt. There's value in that. I mean, let's look at this from a big picture perspective. You're entitled to your opinion, Shakes. I'm not saying you're wrong or right. Nobody's wrong or right here.
Okay.
But Kuhn's been in a regular season game. So, you know, you could say, hey, he's been up against X amount of first-team offensive linemen. When has Kelsey Quarles given us the opportunity to evaluate him from the same perspective?
No, he doesn't have much time to show that. So I get what you're saying, Lance. But
look, I want you to know one thing. I got to jump in here on Quarles. I got to jump in on Quarles. I think Quarles is an intriguing prospect. He's a guy who is fighting for a job at a very crowded position. I certainly think he's a very, very, very likely practice squad guy who may, depending upon how things shake out, have a chance to potentially steal a DT spot. But it's going to take a Herculean effort for him to get on the 53. Now, the other night, Quarles had one assist in 16 snaps. Now, I grant you, it's not always about the stats. Kuhn did not have any tackles in like 30-something snaps. So I'm not going to throw that out to you. But what I am going to say, that you have, in my opinion, you have no right to be gushing over Quarles when he had one assist more than Marcus Kuhn. It's not like he had six tackles, a sack, and a forced fumble. The way you're making it sound, it's as if he was Jim Bird out there, you know?
No.
And he wasn't.
No, let me explain that to you, P-Dot. What I'm saying is that I like what I seen out of Quarles. I like the pressure that he was bringing. I like how he was stuffing a run with Jay Bromley. Now, maybe he didn't get credit for another assist tackle that he had with Bromley, but I seen it. I stopped, paused, slow motion. I watched it. Okay? I watched
also, wait. So, also understand the guys he was going against were like the third and fourth string Bills.
Good point.
Marcus Kuhn was going against the first and second string Bills. Please don't discount that.
I'll give you that. I don't want to keep going on to this debate. You know, I know how you feel. You know how I feel. That's it. I wanted to get on to the Schwartz thing because I said this on yesterday's show, and I'm not accusing Rocky of, you know, stealing my material or anything, but I said that on yesterday's show because I do not trust Charlie Brown. I mean, I think he's going to get Eli killed in one of these preseason games. So, I'm like, you know, it's preseason right now. Why don't you just go ahead and do a wrinkle, throw Schwartz at tackle, and have Richburg at the guard, the left guard. Now, my question for y'all about that is, if you play left guard, right, and you play right tackle, that's what Schwartz did, is it hard to transition that to be a left tackle to, you know, if you know those positions, is it really hard to transition that to the left?
Well, yeah, because not only do you mentally have to process everything in reverse, physically you have to be able to maintain your leverage and your balance when you're going off of the other side of the move. You know that commonly on the defensive side of the ball, guys will switch from left tackle to left end to right end a lot. That happens a lot on defense because it's pretty simple. You get up and you rush the passer, okay? But in offense, when you're trying to make your moves and you're trying to flip-flop, are we doing the right side or are we doing the left side with our blocking schemes? Because remember, everything that you do on that offensive line has a domino effect on the other lineman and the tight end and the fullback behind you. So when you mirror that, it can be, A, confusing, and B, some guys, especially these big elephants, don't have the dexterity or the balance to go both ways in the same fashion. Some guys literally move better to the right than they move better to the left. That can physically be an issue. So it's not that simple to just say flop him. You know, he's got to show a propensity to be able to do it.
Okay, that's what's up.
Now, I think Pugh's an athlete who can do it. That's why we talk about that. He's athletic enough. He's athletic enough.
And he played left tackle in college.
Make the transition to left tackle?
I'm sorry?
Do you think that Schwartz can make the transition to left tackle?
I don't know. What we do know from the research is that he's had experience in the NFL at right tackle. I don't know that he has played any left tackle at all. JoJo is telling me something. What do we have here? Right tackle at Oregon, 3 games. Yeah, I mean, all we have is evidence that Schwartz has had experience at right tackle. We have no evidence at all that he's ever played left tackle. Now, was that because there was no need for it? I don't know. Was that because his skill set and his footwork and his balance are not suited to left tackle? I don't know. But we know Pugh played left tackle at Syracuse.
That has been well documented. Yeah.
Okay, last question, y'all. Last question. Y'all were speaking on Barton, and I think that Barton was supposed to replace Plex. We call him Cheddar Bob on the show. If y'all know what 8 Mile, y'all ever watched 8 Mile.
Well, that's not entirely true because the Giants, even when they drafted Barton, what they thought he was going to do is be a mismatch against shorter corners and then be very good in the red zone. And that, of course, never happened. Plexico, from the very beginning when they signed him, they thought he could be a home run threat. Ramses Barden was never viewed as a down-the-field home run threat. So don't confuse that.
But it's easy to compare because of the height thing. That's what everybody does.
I'm sorry, Lance. My question was, knowing that, okay, now looking at this kid, Washington, how is he off, you know, the line, like creating separation?
He looks to be better than Barden was, and that gives him an edge in terms of potential. But please don't confuse him with Plex, and you didn't do it, and I'm just going to tell you now, don't even think about doing that.
No.
But Washington does look like, to me, he's got a better chance in a one-on-one matchup than Barden did, because Barden just had so much trouble getting away from press coverage and getting his acceleration up to speed.
Okay. All right, man. It's been fun.
So we're good now?
We're great.
Well, it's a draw for day one.
And you know, outside of that defensive tackle spot, once he got on to Charlie Brown and the rest of the guys, we were all in agreement.
Which was nice. Oh, yeah. We could now all hold hands, sing kumbaya. This is beautiful.
Yeah, woo-sah.
So peaceful.
It's a woosah moment. A
there
woo-sah.
We go. It's a wonderful setting. I mean, we moved on. We've grown up as adults. Beautiful. Wonderful. All right, Shakes.
Y'all take care,
you
man.
Too. Have
all
a good right. morning. Shakes, always a character. And glad to hear that the rave reviews are in on Twitter. They are very excited when Shakes' voice takes a extremely high pitch. You get them all worked up. And Andrew at Big Bluviator, very excited about your comparison and breakdown of Ramsey's Barden versus Corey Washington. That has also taken this program to new heights and new levels.
The kid made a big play the other day, and there is no question that that's the kind of thing that's going to get him noticed. Whether or not he gets him a spot on the 53, you know, Lance, I just think time's going to tell. But as I said from the very beginning, when I first saw him at OTAs, he is intriguing.
A lot of people weighing in on Marcus Coon. Just want to get to a few tweets before we wrap up the program. Greatly appreciate all the calls and all the tweets. At Dre9965-2095. Hopefully we can add a few more numbers to that Twitter handle. Defensive tackle Marcus Coon is a
physical... Is that a zip code?
Marcus Coon is a physical specimen, but he is a bigger, bolder, does not move or is agile enough to be as effective. Well, you know, I mean, as Paul laid out, I've seen some versatility out of Marcus Coon. I'm in agreement with Paul. And am I telling you that he's the most athletic defensive tackle on the face of the earth? No, but I think Shake's a little too harsh on him.
You know what Marcus Coon does? He fights and he scraps and he doesn't stop. And a lot of times, guys in this league, especially the lesser quality players, I'm not talking about the elites, but the lesser quality linemen, you'll be surprised how many times either they give up on a play or they take a play off. Marcus Coon makes you pay for that.
And it's funny you brought that up, Paul, because when Marcus Coon was addressing the media earlier in training camp, they were talking about the differences between his game before and after the injury. And when he first arrived, he didn't know much about NFL X's and O's. And he would say, I would just run. And I'd run all over the place, but I'd never give up on the play. Now he understands concepts a little bit better. But he hasn't lost that drive, like you said, Paul. Regardless of whether or not he's lost or the play looks like he's miles away, that guy is going to still run you down. That says a lot, at least, about his mentality.
He reminds me of the drag racing driver who is sitting there at the beginning of the runway, and he's looking at the lights as they're going up and down the little scoreboard thing, and all of a sudden it turns green, and he goes, and floors the damn thing right to the end of the play. How do you not like that if you're a coach?
Got a motor. The Energizer Bunny. Never quits. One other tweet on Marcus Coon at New York Giant fan Dave. Shakes must be blind. I saw Coon chase the Bills QB out of the pocket. He didn't get there, but he flushed the QB out. So there's somebody who saw what Paul saw via the tape and showed that Coon does have some hustle to him. So I'm sure we will continue to debate this. The positive is, and I think we're in all agreement, there's depth at defensive tackle. And
yes,
that's not necessarily a bad thing to have.
Hey, we didn't even talk about the fact that Mike Patterson was left home and Colin Jenkins wasn't really asked to do anything the other night.
Jonathan Hankins, we also got some other tweets. And real quickly,
played
I just
well.
Wanted to touch on that. What about his opportunity to perhaps get that number one job? Patterson is penciled in there, Paul, but does Hankins, I mean, if he really shines, regardless of Patterson's veteran experience, can they switch things up here?
You know what? I think that that defensive tackle spot is going to be much like the ends, where they're going to mix and match and rotate guys, and by the time the game is over, you're going to see they'll relatively have a set number of snaps each and every week anyway. I don't know that there's a, quote, starter per se. Although during the course of the season, if one guy does seem to emerge and gets more and more and more and more, fine, so be it. And that's to the Giants' benefit. But for the time being, I think they truly believe it's a mix-and-match situation. As long as every guy shows that he earns those spots and is willing to produce in the time that he's given.
In terms of the schedule moving forward, the Giants are going to have an evening practice today. They are switching things up. It is closed to the public. I believe there's a concert at MetLife Stadium. I believe it's One Direction. I don't know if you're a big fan, Paul, if you're going to be running around the stadium as the crowds come in. But if that's your cup of tea, I just wanted to let you know that intel, as well as the rest of the fan base. And they'll work out also in the evening on Wednesday. And before you know it, it's another training up game on Saturday when they host the Steelers.
Yeah, the folks should know out there, if you're planning to come to practice this week, the only one you're going to be able to get to go to is Wednesday, which begins at 5:40 at night. It's a couple of hours. That's the only one that's open to the public this week, because on Tuesday, as you said tonight, they're closing it because of the concert. On Thursday, the Jets have a preseason game at MetLife Stadium, and so that Giants practice is also going to be closed. They just can't deal with the crowd control in the parking lot. And then on Friday, there is no practice because the Giants have a Saturday night home game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So there is one practice available to the public this week, 5:40 on Wednesday night here at the Quest Center.
So there you go. That's the logistics, the breakdown of the upcoming schedule. You can hear Big Blue Kickoff live each and every morning here on Giants.com.
And I've just been given this news flash. A bonus for those of you who want to come to Wednesday night's practice, the Giants will have several alums on hand to sign autographs. And this may be an incentive for some of you folks. David Deal, Kareem McKenzie, Sean O'Hara, and Deion Grant. All guys who have Super Bowl rings will probably be on hand not only to sign their autographs, but maybe take pictures with their jewelry.
Very nice. So you can reminisce with some of the old school Giants. Paul DeTino, of course, will always be here at practice. It takes a lot to get him to miss a practice. And from what I've been told, he is once in a blue moon asked for an autograph too. And he's not a shy man. So listen, if you find him in passing, feel free. He will certainly add to that collection of Deal, Grant, and so forth. You could throw in a little Paul DeTino, John Hancock in there, too. Try to sell it on eBay. I don't know what the going rate is in this day and age. We'll maybe try to have some comparisons on future shows. Anyway, had a blast this morning. Great job on Twitter. Great job on the lines. As I mentioned, Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're with you each and every morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, here on Giants.com. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.